Off the Ball Breakfast.
I've used Rory McIlroy's achievement as personal growth for myself. You can overcome adversity to lead your business in Q2.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
Good evening. You're welcome along to Monday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you till 7 o'clock, till 10 o'clock even this evening at 7 o'clock right now. Coming up from 7:30, Jerry Thornley is going to join us in studio for Monday Night Rugby. He was at the Principality Stadium on Saturday to watch Bordeaux win their first major honours. They are Champions Cup champions, having beaten Northampton Saints in a brilliant final, so we'll chat to him about that. From 8 to 9 then is your GAA hour of a Monday. We've got Colin Boyle and Darren O'Sullivan chatting about Donegal getting beaten by Tyrone at home. The first time that Jim McGuinness has been beaten in Ballybuffet as Donegal manager. And we'll also talk about Armagh's win over Derry and Monaghan's big win away to Louth. Monaghan in great position now after getting that win away from home on Saturday. And then after 9 o'clock on the football show, we'll have Nathan Murphy joining us from Liverpool. He is at the parade. He has been there earlier this afternoon as well. And then we'll also be speaking to Rachel O'Sullivan from Girls on the Ball, because Katie McCabe is a Champions League winner. So plenty coming your way between now and 10 o'clock. Our number is 0879 180 180 if you want to drop us a WhatsApp. Stephen Doyle has got your news round. Steve-O, how are you doing?
I'm great, thank you, Owen. Good evening.
Mick McCarthy, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Watching the sport yesterday afternoon, I'm sure most people were in a similar enough boat. It was a simple dual screen job, sort of pick your Premier League game that would have surrounded the Champions League race, and the other screen being probably Cork versus Waterford in the hurling. I don't think either of the storylines really exploded into life. We'll get to Villa in a moment, but like Nottingham Forest were disappointed to get home to Chelsea. That was the potential to be a real storyline there if they were any good. And on the hurling front, there was potential for Cork-Waterford to be a blistering storyline if Waterford were any good or if they were up to Cork's level, and it just never really felt like they ever got there. So that's totally fair. The game ends, and then I start to catch wind of the fact that all of a sudden the hurling structure is up for debate again. This can't be real, can it? I know there's a story coming up in your newsroom in a little while.
It is funny that it's so much so that like I saw a few kind of like Twitter grumblings. And I said to you this morning and to Steve-O, we must have a bit of a chat about that. And then like an hour later, we get, you know, the Wexford chairman, Leinster Council chairman, who coming out and saying that we have to revisit the format. And suddenly we're gone into official, actual news territory and not just something to chat about. And it's like,
why on earth would we change the hurling structure?
Well, please stay with us, folks. We are going to get the structures talk here, but there's lots of other interesting news.
Well, yeah, maybe we leave the specifics of what the structure could be or should be. The argument, I suppose, is that it's 8 months again until we'll see Clare, Waterford and Wexford.
So it's a timing of the year problem.
And yeah, I suppose, and also how quickly everything is played off. But if you ask me,
that's not the same thing as the structure.
If you ask me, we've been looking at the best structure that's ever been in the game for quite a few years now, since 2018 when it came in first. And everybody gets four games or five games in Leinster, and that's a long championship season traditionally if you're not good enough to qualify. Now, I know in Munster that can be a tight affair, and that can be something that's a little bit kind of, that's a little bit hard to take, I suppose. But at the same time, you've had four games to get in the top three of a five-team competition. Not everybody can qualify for everything. I say that as a Clare fan. Obviously, you're going to get that, you know, if you're Waterford and you've never got out of the group. I do understand that. We won the All-Ireland last year and generally have got, the previous three Munster finals. But at the same time, it's like, it happens. Sometimes the year goes against you. You've played everybody. You've had your chance against everybody. It's not like the Champions League system where it's a look at the draw or anything like that. So I kind of think that, yes, it's a long time, and that is disheartening, and it is hard to take. But it doesn't mean that we have to leave every... I know that's not really what you asked, but what annoyed me about a lot of the proposals is that it just keeps everybody in the championship forever, and it's like nobody's ever out. And it's just like, at some point there has to be some jeopardy, or else what was great about the games in the first place will not be great anymore.
Yeah.
Nobody will watch it. You think you're going to sell out Munster Championship matches when everybody gets through anyway?
The only reason why everybody's on the edge of their seat is because of the fact that there is two good teams getting dumped out of Munster in brutal fashion. There's excitement and there's brilliant hurling, which makes you watch it in the first place. But the thing that makes you feel something when you're actually watching a Munster hurling game is that, geez, a a really good team could get knocked out here. Like that brilliant game between Limerick and Cork last year in Páirc Uí Chaoimh in the regulation section. That was Cork's season on the line. That's what made that performance brilliant, was that their backs were up against the wall and they were really fighting for their 2024 season on that occasion. And I don't know, I just couldn't believe it when I heard that this was a narrative from it. Sometimes you have a disappointing season, the structure, the skeleton is brilliant, and moving to the league format, certainly from a Munster Championship perspective, has been the best thing for Irish sport in a long, long time, I would say.
I was there a few years ago at Parnell Park when Dublin knocked Galway out.
2019 was it?
Or? 2021.
Okay, yeah.
And there was a lot of people, like, you know, obviously Galway were broken hearted being knocked out at that stage and they didn't get to play in the Leinster final. But as a Dublin fan, it was great. Parnell Park was rocking. And as you say, there is that jeopardy of a big team going out before they get to a decider. And that's just the way it is now. You do get a fair rattle. You get a few games to prove yourself. And if you don't do it after four or five matches, well, you know, you deserve to go out, don't you?
Yeah. And like, I mean, that was just old school, you know, knockout 2021 because of COVID, but there was a 2019 year as well where Galway got knocked out and Kilkenny, Wexford, yeah. Dublin, Galway yeah. all ended on 5 points.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're going to have, I know they've added an extra team to Leinster to kind of
spring
it out.
2019 was the year I was thinking of, sorry, not 2020.
Oh, that was unbelievable. I remember being out that night and like not being, like, had the game, you know, ready to watch in full and then heard the result of the way home and like couldn't believe it, you know. That was that, it was one of those like
huge,
it was a massive shock. Don't forget that was the Galway team who come off win the All-Ireland in 17, yeah. had got to the final in 18 and then were out in the group stage in 19. Like nobody saw it coming. So there's been drama there too. There's been that obviously Kilkenny and Wexford was a draw that day, and that's the only way that Galway could get knocked out, like, you know. So there's been loads yeah. of drama there. It's I just think that it's such an overreaction. And what happened yesterday was we had a knockout game in Munster yesterday. The problem was nobody really believed that Waterford were going to beat Cork.
Exactly.
There's not much you can do about that other than, like, I mean, do we want to kick Waterford out of the championship or something like that? You know what I mean? It's like they put themselves in a position to qualify and they lost the game. That's the look of the draw. That's the way it came down to. At least we got, it was a real game. Like,
and they hit the post moments after scoring their goal as well, which kind of made it more of a contest.
A lot differently could have happened.
So, yeah for sure. We will get to your news round in just a moment, Steve. On the news round is with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action. So a reminder that we've got Monday Night Rugby from 7:30, GAA from 8 to 9, and then the football show after 9 o'clock. Just want to bring you some breaking news. Sky News reporting that police are responding to an incident at the Liverpool Parade after reports of a car collision with pedestrians. So the incident has happened as thousands of fans, obviously, out in the streets at Liverpool celebrating their Premier League title yesterday. A police spokesperson has said, "We are currently dealing with reports of a road traffic collision in Liverpool city centre. We are contacted just after 6 p.m. today, Monday the 26th of May, following reports a car had been in collision with a number of pedestrians on Water Street. The car stopped at the scene and a male has been detained. Emergency services are currently on the scene. We will issue more updates as we have them." So we will also keep you up to speed tonight and off the ball if you do get any further updates there, but a fairly grim sounding story.
Yeah, I just saw the video on and it's horrible, you know. Like, hopefully there aren't any fatalities, but it was like not moving at a high speed but was like mowing over obviously pedestrian. Everybody's a pedestrian. It was on a crowded parade street, so yeah, like, I mean, let's see what happens, and hopefully people only have minor injuries and, you know, the incident is dealt with and doesn't completely ruin not just like the night, but the entire everything that's going on in Liverpool at the moment. You know, we're obviously talking to Nathan later on and we're going to hear some of that, and it's as jovial an atmosphere as you could possibly have. So yeah, obviously we don't know too much yet.
Yeah, awful scenes there, and it is a really, really grim video that is doing the rounds online. So we just hope everybody's okay and we will keep you up to speed on any news that does emerge from Liverpool over the course of Off the Ball this evening. Steve-O, your news round, obviously that's the big breaking news this evening. Where did you want to start? You wanted to start with matters on the pitch, I believe, and the fallout from Aston Villa's defeat to Manchester United?
Yes, well, Aston Villa have complained to the PGMOL over the inexperience of the referee in their 2-0 Premier League loss to Manchester United. Morgan Rogers was ruled to have kicked the ball out of the United goalkeeper's hands before scoring when the game was 0-0. Because official Thomas Bramall blew his whistle so early, they could not consult VAR over the incident. Ireland. Now, referee pundit Dermot Gallagher defended Bramall, whom he described as an official still bedding in his 19th Premier League game yesterday, but it was his 112th overall across the English leagues. I just had a quick look. We're going to hear from John McGinn in a moment as regards experience, inexperience, whatever the case may be. Some of the officials who were, you know, working at games yesterday and what kind of experience they had. Bramall, as I mentioned, 19 Premier League games he got to yesterday. You had John Brooks, 61 Premier League games. He was VAR for the Fulham City match. So, look, there was a bit riding on that. Bit of experience in the VAR booth, you can't argue with that. Darren England was referee for Crystal Palace against Liverpool at Anfield. 77 Premier League games, you know, in charge of a match that really of no consequence because both teams knew really where they were at. Yeah, Graeme Scott, referee for the Southampton-Arsenal match. Not a huge amount riding on it. He's got 106 Premier League games under the belt. Then you got Michael Oliver. 399 Premier League games. He could have got number 400 if he had refereed a match yesterday. But he was the VAR for Spurs-Brighton. Not a huge game, really. He could have done the Villa United game with so much riding on it. Craig Pawson, 268 Premier League games. He was referee for Wolves versus Brentford.
Okay.
And then you had...
Let's get to who was
Stuart Atwell.
Big games.
Stuart Atwell, 214 Premier League games. He was VAR yesterday at Old Trafford. He could have actually taken the black uniform and whistle and done that match yesterday. But anyway, the results saw Villa miss out in Champions League qualification, with Newcastle securing fifth spot despite that 1-0 defeat to Everton. And Villa captain John McGinn at Old Trafford gave this very measured response in his post-match interview with TNT Sports.
I don't think any of us in the dressing room, anyone watching the game, felt like we deserved to win. Man United deserved to win. They were a better team. They were on the front foot, missed loads of chances. But the decision is incredible. I think everyone, when VAR was implemented, wanted the correct decisions. They wanted the, if it's offside, be offside. You watch rugby, if there's a try given, even if the referee's awarded it, if it's wrong, it's overturned. If it's right, the try is given. So I know it's the rule, I've seen it before a couple of times, but it's so, so hard to take, especially when the impact it has on us as a team and as a club is so big. So for Thomas to boys whistle at that point is, it's really, really tough to take and to handle. I don't think we deserve to win the game, but at that point, you're one up with 20 to go. All you need is a point to get in the Champions League. It's a really costly one.
Well, Steve-O's done your hard work for you here, Mick, in terms of painting the picture of injustice against Aston Villa.
So Villa have, I think, made a complaint to PGMOL about...
inexperience.
Again, not asking for a decision to be overturned or anything like that. And I think that's fair enough. Excuse me. But other than that, like, you're going to be surprised. I think these things happen. Like, I watched that game... and I thought the referee made a terrible decision. And I do think if it didn't happen, they'd be in the Champions League. I think given what happened at Newcastle and given the fact that we're going 1-0 up with however many minutes to go, changes the game, it adds to their resilience, makes them believe they would have had to concede two, they only needed a point, I think they would have done it. I'm fairly sure they would have done it. So it's hard to take. But at some point you do have to look and say, The biggest two games Villa had this season where the pressure was on them. So the biggest game they had this season was the second leg against PSG, but they were well behind and there was a kind of a freebie thing and they performed unbelievably, right? But where the pressure is on them, the two biggest games were the FA Cup semi-final at Wembley against Palace and yesterday. And both of them were by far the worst performances of the season. Nothing.
The second leg against PSG?
No. The second leg against PSG was, I'm saying that was the biggest game, but the pressure was off.
Mm. Okay, yeah.
Whereas I'm saying the ones where the pressure was on and it was like must win or bust, they did not turn up. And I thought Villa were terrible yesterday. And some of the big, big performers of even just the last few weeks, like Onana, like McGinn, like Matt Cash. Matt Cash is one of those players that I think a lot of Villa fans and a lot of football fans wouldn't think overly highly of. And I can tell you this, Matty Cash for the last month and a half has been outstanding. He has been like this, and he was terrible yesterday, and he was the fault of Martinez getting sent off. Martinez has a good game initially because he had Manchester United creating chances, and then goes and gets himself sent off.
Martinez is also to blame there.
Oh, 100%. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying he went and got himself sent off because you can't. It's not. He didn't need to do
that. Mad moment, wasn't it?
He didn't need to do that. It was insane.
I've never seen such a physical body check from, like, if you want to be cynical, usually in football, it's a pull down or something gentler than that.
Yeah.
At least he did, you know, physically exact something on an opposition player.
But to my point, right, it's not to say that they're not hard done by. It's not to say that it wasn't like Villa had won 8 out of 9 games leading up to that. I don't think that was even talked about the run that they did, that they went, but they did not turn up on the night, on the day. And look, that's fine. They still could have done it. They still probably should have done it. But the referee made a mistake the same way as Matty Cash made a mistake and Emi Martinez made a mistake.
Yeah, look, they,
you know, and Jacob Ramsey made a mistake when he just let a Matt in without following him at all for the goal. That was just as important. You know, it was just as important. These things happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, it's not the first time the PGMOL have had complaints made against them this season. And look, I'm completely neutral across the Premier League. And I think that's a very measured response, like John McGinn that you gave, Mick. But a lot of Villa fans are angry about it. And I can see why. I can see why the club is angry about it, because this totally changes Aston Villa's summer. We all know about the issues there with the... I suppose their finances, and I suppose it's going to give them a totally different transfer window now because they won't have as much money, and regards to profit and sustainability rules and all that kind of stuff all comes into it. So with all of that in mind and the fact that we know there was so much riding on it, I think the PGMOL do have a lot to answer for here, because I said I've given you a list there of all the different officials who were working across the games yesterday, and officials that were working on games and in positions where they would have been better served refereeing that game at Old Trafford yesterday. And I feel sorry for Thomas Bramall, because he's getting stick where he should not be getting stick. He should not have been put in that position by the PGMOL. A huge, huge game at Old Trafford, the biggest stadium in England, and a game with so much riding on it. He should not have been in charge of that. He's mainly a Championship referee up until now, and they should have had one of their more experienced heads in the middle for that game yesterday.
Yeah, I think that that goes over what I said, and I'm not angry about it. I just sort of think that you have to look at these things as we're in here giving out about them every week. Mm. You kind of expect that they're going to make stupid
decisions. I'm defending
decisions.
The referee here.
And fair enough, but I don't mean the referee. I mean we're giving out about the way they run VAR, the way they appoint referees, the way they do all these things. It's like, it's sort of a given that they're not up to standard, you know, most of the time. And that's why we're spending so much time talking about them instead of the game. And I'm sort of saying that's the sort of cost of doing business. That's the league you gotta do things in. People were sending pictures today, which I think is unfair or whatever, but they had the pictures at the time the goal line technology didn't, you know, Villa wouldn't be in this position if they got relegated that season. Do you know, like, these things just, they do kind of happen, you know, and you kind of, you know, what's good for the goose and stuff, because I would be dismissing this if it went the other way.
Mm. We do have some reaction to Saturday as well, Steve-O. So obviously, Katie McCabe and Arsenal, Champions League winners.
Yes, indeed. Carlo Ward's squad are in Istanbul to face Turkey in the first game of a Nations League doubleheader. But Katie McCabe will join them later in the week. This morning, her former Arsenal teammate and current international teammate, Louise Quinn, was waxing lyrically about the Ireland captain. The 29-year-old played a key part in Arsenal's 1-0 victory against Barcelona in Lisbon on Saturday night. It's the second time the Gunners have won the top European honour in women's football, 18 years after they first won it. There were 3 Irish players in the last Arsenal Champions League winning squad: former Ireland captain Emma Byrne and defenders Ciara Grant and Yvonne Tracy. There is a photo of the 3 players with the Champions League trophy at the club training ground, a photo that McCabe cited as inspirational going into the decider on Saturday. She also spoke about the influence of Quinn when they shared a dressing room during the 18-19 league title winning season. Quinn is overjoyed that McCabe will provide the same kind of inspiration to young female players.
You know, Katie's now done her best 18 years on to make sure that there's another iconic photo with that trophy, and just showing, you know, what for her, what a young girl from Talla can do, you know. And there's been moments where it's been really difficult for her, you know, trying to, you know, take that next step up, but she's constantly just got through it and fought through it with just her grit, her talent, you know, her personality. Yeah, I absolutely agree. You know, that even just a picture tells a thousand words in terms of that one with Emma, Keir and Yvonne, you know, and what it's done. You know, so I think she's absolutely just has shown again what a young girl from Ireland can do.
You were bursting with local pride on Saturday, Stephen.
Ah, tell you what, Owen. I'm obviously not living there now. Kilmaine, I grew up, and my miserable amateur football career began as an underage player for Kilmaine on the B team. And I played there for a few years anyway. But we used to get changed in this green hut that was at the bottom of the football pitches in Kilmaine. Now they have a really brilliant setup there now. It's across the road beside the Kilmaine Community Centre. But on that old container, it's an old shipping container painted green. But now on that, it's adorned with a brilliant, brilliant mural of Katie McCabe right across. And I just think it's amazing because when Katie started out, there was no women's or girls teams in Kilmaine. She had to go off and play her football elsewhere because there was no women's girls team in Kilmaine. She's carved out an amazing career. But I just think it's amazing the way there's a mural there of her now on the old boys changing room, and it just goes to show you how far the women's game has come, and she now is the inspiration for young footballers in what is a huge catchment area in Kilmaine. So really, yeah, really proud of her. I'm sure the whole of Kilmaine is, the whole of Tallaght is, and the whole of Ireland, I'm sure. Just incidentally as well, the attendance at the game in Lisbon, just coming up to 39,000. When Arsenal last won it in 2008, 18 years ago, so it was 2007, there was 6,265 at the first leg in Sweden against that Swedish side, Umeå. And in the second leg in London, there was 3,467. So under 10,000 across the two legs. And we're talking nearly 40,000 there for the final on Saturday.
Yeah, it's exploded in the last 2 decades for sure. Brilliant scenes as well today in London with the homecoming for that Arsenal team, and Katie McCabe enjoying herself, to say the very least.
I love that though. It's like there's no, you know, it's one of those things that's like the most unsurprising thing is that Katie McCabe would be so front and centre and so like just having the crack at the celebrations, but she did not let anybody down.
Yeah. We do have plenty to get to on tonight's news round. If you are just joining us, you may be looking out for an update on what's actually happening in Liverpool. Just a really grim story developing that police are responding to an incident near the parade after reports of a car collision with a number of pedestrians. The latest that we have from police in Liverpool is that the car stopped at the scene, a male has been detained and emergency services are on the scene. So since that statement was issued, there have been no more details emerging. So we will see what happens. But as of now, there's nothing new to tell you basically on what's happening in Liverpool other than a fairly grim incident has occurred. So more on that as soon as we get it. Steve, where do you want to go next?
Well, the chair of the Leinster Council, as we alluded to earlier, has revealed he is seriously looking at changing the current championship format. In Leinster yesterday, Galway set up a final against Kilkenny after picking up a first away win over Dublin in the championship. Antrim were relegated to the Joe McDonagh Cup. David Fitzgerald's team suffering a 3-15 to 1-16 loss at Offaly in their must-win encounter. Ali Chin scored 1-13 as Wexford beat Kilkenny in their derby match at Wexford Park. Wexford, like Waterford and Clare and Munster, failed to win enough matches in the round robin and won't play championship again until next year. So as it stands, Leinster have every team playing each other once in that round robin. First and second place teams advance to the Leinster final. Third place team goes to the All-Ireland preliminary quarter-finals, and the rest are eliminated from the championship, with the bottom team may face relegation to next year's John McDonagh Cup. So the chair of the Leinster Council, David Kent, was speaking ahead of that match between Wexford and Kilkenny yesterday.
Regarding our planned season, I believe it's time for it to go into August. I believe it's also planned for our championship to be extended. But what I will say, today 72% of the counties in Ireland will no longer be hurling. And that's the facts of it. We've left with two teams in Joe McDonagh. They will play next week, 6 days after their final. So, look, what I'm saying is there is no more hurling for 72% of our games. So we need to look at a revised format, and something that I'm looking at seriously.
OK, the revised format and teams being dumped out of the championship early, they don't go hand in hand. Like, you can keep the same format and push it back a little bit, and then teams don't get knocked out of the championship earlier. So I don't see a revised format being the fix to it. It's a new calendar that fixes the thing that Derek Kent is talking about here. Just a text in here from Sean in Dublin. Lads, if Waterford drop away and players say, why bother, then the current structure is toast. The provincials need to be knocked out, and then groups helps every county to progress. At the moment, there is a glass ceiling for Antrim, Kildare, Leash, etc. Sean in Dublin. Now, I don't doubt the second part of that, but Antrim, yeah. Kildare, Leash, that is...
There's other ways of solving that.
Yeah, but Waterford players drop away and say, why bother? Then that's Waterford's problem. This is a team who've been in an All-Ireland final twice in the last 10 years. And if they have that defeatist attitude, then, I mean, that is
they're absolutely in a problem for them.
They're
in a tough position, but it's not as if, like, why can't they compete? You know what I mean? They've done it before. They can do it again. And
of course they will.
And they've showed improvement. They've showed signs of improvement this year and so on. It's like, I just don't get it. I just think that there's... The idea of a competition is for it to be a competition. We can't just, like, we need to spend so much time and energy in this country. The work that people don't want to do at rising the game across the country. The answer to it isn't just to let everybody in the competition until the end.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then not have any, like, look at the crowds that were at these games this year.
Yeah.
Pack stadiums. That's not going to happen if we do it the other way.
This has turned into a news round full of breaking news. Mayo GAA have released a statement that their football manager, Kevin McStay, is stepping back from his role for the immediate future. So the statement goes that McStay wishes to announce that he is stepping back from his role as Mayo senior football team manager for the immediate future to deal with some personal health issues. You will have seen that he had a health incident over the course of the weekend. A statement from Kevin McStay himself. Mayo GAA board and I are in strong agreement that the current assistant manager slash head coach Stephen Rochford will lead our preparations for the upcoming games. We're blessed to have a man of Stephen's calibre, and as a valued member of the management team for the past three seasons, he ensures continuity. While I will not be on the training field or on the sideline on match day, I will be with management and players in spirit every step of the way. And then Seamus Toohey is also on the statement. He says, we extend our best wishes to Kevin and thank him for all his work to date. We look forward to him returning to the role as soon as it is practical for him to do so. We also stand fully behind Stephen and everyone involved in the setup, said Seamus Toohey, who is, of course, the chairperson of Mayo GAA. They said they're going to be making no further statement on this matter. And we wish Kevin McStay well over the next little while. Steve-O, what is next on the script?
Well, we should mention as well, obviously, the Director General and the President of the GAA will be in Mayo tonight attending that board meeting in relation to the finances. So I do think we have a reporter there. We'll have news on that maybe tonight or in the morning. Just to move to Munster. And, of course, the Munster hurling final was set up over the weekend. Cork setting up that final against Limerick after bouncing back from their 16-point trouncing by the Treaty to beat Waterford by 6 points at Páirc Uí Chaoimh. Waterford's loss meant the exit of the competition at the round-robin stage, with Tipperary finishing in third place. The champions from last year, Clare, ended off their campaign with a 320-24-point win at Limerick. Now, today, the Munster Council confirmed there'd be no Munster senior hurling final tickets on public sale. Limerick play Cork in the decider on Saturday, June 7th in Limerick. Tickets will be distributed through the participating county boards only. Season ticket holders from the participating counties will receive their tickets through the normal channels.
Yeah, so once again, like Hensty trying to get a ticket to Limerick versus Cork in the Munster Hurling Championship. 0879 180 180 is our number. Great to see Quevin Kelleher with his Premier League medal yesterday, says one texter. Great achievement, and he made a real contribution to their season. While Martin and Clonsilla says, I don't remember Villa complaining when a goal was not awarded against them at Villa Park when the ball was 2 yards over the line. The mistake kept them up that year.
Sheffield United.
And I brought that up myself, right? And I agree. I will say everybody else complained. So, you know. Anyway.
Steve, do you have time for one more story for us?
Yeah, quickly. Robbie Henshaw is out for the rest of Leinster's season with a knee injury, so he'll miss that URC quarter final against Scarlets at the Aviva Stadium. Tadhg Furlong has a minor calf injury to miss that game as well, but it's understood he'll be okay for the Lions. And just to tell you about Munster's Jack Crowley, he's been past fit for their quarter final against the Sharks on Saturday.
Stephen Doyle, thank you very much. Mick, thank you.
Thanks.
Off the ball breakfast.
I've used Rory McIlroy's achievement as personal growth for myself. You can overcome adversity to lead your business in Q2.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.